And we're holding on to Gimel Amud Aleph top line. We finally have the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim bringing the Torahs. So now let's talk about the details of the bringing the Torahs that he does over there. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, V'nosan asak Torahs ala esh lifnei Hashem, what it says, you should place the Torahs on the fire in front of Hashem. So in front of Hashem means in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, means shalo yisakin mevachutz v'yachnis, means you should not prepare the Torahs, put the Torahs on the coals outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then bring it in. He has to put it on the coals in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And this is lahotzi milibon shel tzedukim. This is, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, to exclude what the tzedukim think, sh'omrim, where they claim yisakin mevachutz v'yachnis, that you should put the Torahs on the coals outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and then come in with it already smoking. So the Gemara says, and in fact, we had earlier in the Masechta that the Ziknei Beistin on the day before Yom Kippur would have to make him swear that he's going to do things the right way and not alter it the way that Tzedukim did, and he would be crying that they're choshed him, and they're crying that they had to be choshed b'ksheirim. Because the Tzedukim would make this alteration, so therefore they had to do that. So the Gemara says, my Jewish. So what did the Tzedukim use as a basis for their understanding that you should put it that you should put the Torahs on the coals outside? A drush, by the way, usually means a drusha of a pasuk. We know that Tzedukim didn't believe in drushas of psukim, but it means, in other words, how did they understand the pasuk? So they said, when it says ki be'onan eroi ala kapotis, the pasuk says, Hashem says, I will appear in the cloud on the Kapotis, so they understood the cloud to be the cloud of smoke from the Kapotis. So therefore that teaches us that it has to already be smoking, there already has to be a cloud forming by the time he enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the Chachamim said, that can't be. The Pasuk already says, and the pasuk that we just quoted, that he should place the Torahs on the fire in front of Hashem, implying in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And also the order of the psukim kind of bears that out, because you have, first the pasuk says, v'hevi v'beis l'parochas, he brings it inside behind the parochas, and then it continues, v'nosan asak Torahs ala esh lifnei Hashem. So, im kein matam lema kiba onan eroi ala kapotis. So the Chachamim say, so what does kiba onan ala kapotis teach us? It teaches us, now, and the simple meaning of the Pasuk, Rashi explains on the Pasuk, it means that the Kohen Gadol shouldn't just go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim whenever he wants, because my Shechina is always apparent over there in a cloud. We find throughout Tanakh that when Hashem's Shechina appears, then a cloud accompanies it. We have in this week's parasha, for example, where they're threatening Kalev and Yehoshua, and a cloud descends on the Oil Moed, and everybody realizes the Shechina is there. But here, the Gemara wants to, the Chachamim wanted to understand that the Ki Be'onan, Eru Ala Kapotis, is teaching us a din. So what is that din? Melamed Shenosim, Mala Oshan, that teaches us that the Torahs has to have Mala Oshan in it, something which makes the smoke go straight up. We talked about before, by the way, we mentioned a couple of things, something that Rav Shamshon Yochel Hirsch says, and something that the Rebbe talks about in a Sicha, about the deeper significance of this argument between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim about putting the Torahs on the coals outside or inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the Tzedukim look at it from the point of view, we have to consider what's proper in the world, and their whole thing is we don't just go according to what the Torah says. We have to consider what society does, and that's the more important thing to us. And then you have also the idea that they have the idea that ever talked about in a Sicha, about it, that their view was that as long as the end product is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then it doesn't matter what the steps are that you reach to get there, even if those are outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, whereas we say that no, the steps also have to be Kodesh on the way also. Okay, continues the Braisa. So we said Kiba Onan Eidu Ala Kapotis, Melamed Shenosin Mamala Oshan, so that teaches us that you have to put Mala Oshan into it to make something that makes the smoke go straight up. Then the Braisa continues, and we nayin shenosin mamala oshan. How do we know that you put in mala oshan? Now the Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean? We just said how we know from the word kiba onan. So shenema, because the pasuk says v'chisa ananak tertus es hakapotus, because the pasuk says the cloud of tertus will cover the kapotus. So again, we see that the cloud that it's talking about is the cloud of Todas. Ha-loi-nosan ba-mala-oshan. Therefore, we see from that, that if you didn't put mala-oshan in the Todas, o-shechiser-achas mikol-sam-maneha, or if you left out any one of its ingredients, chayiv misa, then the Kohen Gadol is going to be chayiv misa for going with that defective Todas into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, you have a few different opinions on that last point. We've talked about before that Beis Yosef explains that no, Mala Oshan is not really integral to the Ketodos, and he learns that you're supposed to have it in there, but if you don't have it in there, the Ketodos is not possible, and he's not Chayiv Misa. So he would explain, because as the Gemara is going to go on over here with different opinions, from which we can infer that maybe Mala Oshan is not so essential. And therefore the chiser achas we call samaneh would be chayiv misa, but not necessarily the mala oshan. On the other hand, the Be'er Sheva strongly disagrees with that and says that no, we see from this gemara. One of the proofs the Beis Yosef gives is back on Daf Lamed Ches a couple of weeks back. We have the story about where Beis Avtinas didn't want to reveal the secret of what mala oshan is. So we said the chachamim fired them and hired people from Alexandria to make the Ketodos instead, but they didn't know what Mala Oshan was, and therefore the smoke of theirs wouldn't go straight up. And we see, says the Beis Yosef, we see that their Ketodos was kosher. The Chachamim just said it's not Mehuder to have it that way, therefore we need Beis Avtinas back. So you see that not having Mala Oshan in there is not essential. The Be'er Sheva strongly disagrees with that and says that no, it definitely is possible and definitely Chayiv Misa if there's no Mala Oshan in it. All it is the guys from Alexandria, they didn't know the Mala Oshan plant. They knew some kind of Mala Oshan plant, or maybe some part of it, as we're going to talk about soon, the roots versus the leaves, that does the job, but it didn't do the job fully. So the smoke would go up, but it wouldn't, wouldn't go straight up in a column like it should. So that's fine, is that at least they put in some kind of Mala Oshan, but if they'd put in nothing at all, then yes, it would be possible. And then the Mishnah Lamelech takes sort of a middle ground on it. He says that maybe there's a difference between the Ketodos of Yom Kippur versus the rest of the year. In fact, he says, you see, this part about leaving out Mala Oshan, the Rambam puts it in Hilchos Yom Kippurim, he doesn't put it in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, where he deals with the year-round Ketodos. So maybe the vote is, in the year-round Ketodos, that was what the guys from Alexandria made, and they didn't put in Mala, let's say, like the Beis Yosef says, they didn't put in Mala Oshan at all. Fine, okay, b'di'evit it's kosher that way. But the Yom Kippur Ketodos, as we're saying here in the Gemara, would have to have Mala Oshan in it, and if not, then it's Chayiv Misa. So in other words, the Chachamim would have had to, so even if the Chachamim didn't figure that it needs to be Mehudar for the rest of the year, they would have anyway had to bring back Beis Avtinas to make the Ketodos for Yom Kippur that year. There's a lot of other different opinions about it, but those are some of them. Okay. Next, the Gemara asks, so what are you telling me that if the Ketodos is missing an ingredient, then he's Chayiv Misa for bringing that kind of defective Ketodos? The question is, but typically, don't we have a different reason why he should be Chayiv Misa? After all, he's going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim for nothing. The whole point is the Torah says he should go in only in order to offer the Ketodos, and then we're going to have later on to sprinkle the blood and do the other things. He's not just supposed to go in there without a purpose at all. If he takes in a defective Ketodos, then it comes out as a Bir Reikonis. He came in for no good reason. So therefore, he should be Chayiv Misa for that reason alone. Why do you need to mention the point about Davka because there's no Mala Oshan, or because Chiser Achas because Samanea, as though it's something unique to Ketodos? It's not. It's more general, the fact that he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim for nothing. So Rav Shesha says, fine, we're talking about, let's say he didn't know that he's not allowed to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim without a purpose. So on that, he was shogeg, but he knew that there is a chiyuv misa for bringing defective Ketodos. So therefore, so the chiyuv misa that he's going to get is only for the fact that it was Ketodos that's missing an ingredient. Rav Ashi, I'm going to tell him, hizid bezur bezur. Rav Ashi says, you don't even need that. You could even say that it means he was mazed on both of them. But going to Ayel Shtei HaKtoris, imagine that he brings in two batches of Ketodos. Achas Shlema v'achas Chaseira. He brings in one that's complete, that has all the ingredients, and another one that's lacking some of the ingredients. Now, on the face of it, that would mean that he actually offers both of them, and in fact, the Ritva learns that way. On the other hand, the Mishnah Lamelech and a couple of Rishonim argue that maybe it's not necessary to say that. maybe just the fact that he brings in the complete Ketores is enough, even if he doesn't actually offer it, because that makes it at least that his beer was not a beer Reikonis. He didn't come in for nothing, because conceivably he could have offered that complete Ketores. Anyway, so he brought in two, Achas Shlema v'Achas Chasera, one whole, the other one defective. Abia loy mechayev. So now Rav Ashi says you can't be mechayev him missa for going in without a purpose. Because after all, he did bring in a whole, a complete ketores, and that's something that he belongs in the Kodesh HaKadoshim to do. On the other hand, he can be chayev misa for offering the ketores, for offering the defective one, to come makta ketores chasera, because after all, he is offering defective ketores, and there's a separate chiyuv misa b'nei shemayim for that. The Shagas Arya asks in his Truvas and also in Gvura Sari why he shouldn't be chayev for a different reason, namely that he's then burning something on Yom Kippur without a purpose. After all, burning is one of the 39 malachas. Usually a person does malacha on Yom Kippur, he's chayev kares. Over here, fine, the Torah tells him to go and burn the Torahs in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and to do a variety of other malachas in connection with the Korbanos. But if he's doing defective Torahs, which is not which is where he's not yotze the mitzvah, then it comes out he's also burning for no purpose. Why didn't we mention that? There's a few different answers that Achronim give, one of them being that after all, the Havara really is not so much the process of Havara that he started was when he took the coals from the Mizbeach, because when you scoop up coals, you make that some of them are going to be burning more brightly because you move them around, and therefore that causes some of them to burn more brightly. And at that point, he was still entitled to do that because that was before he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with bad Ketores. So at that point, what he did, that first act of Havara was Mutter, and therefore the rest of it, you can't be Mechayiv and Kodesh for either, because basically all one long thing. Okay. Fine. Now getting back to the Braise, so we said we 9 inch and noisin Mamala Oshan. So first we said that there needs to be Mala Oshan in it because it says Kiba Onan Ero Alakapurus. So that Pasuk, which the Tzedukim misinterpreted to mean that he should put the Tertus on the fire outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Chachamim said the correct meaning of that Pasuk is that there needs to be Mala Oshan. And then the Braise had continued, and how do we know that you need Mala Oshan? Because it says V'chisa Ananak Tertus. So that's the Omar. Omar, uminayin shen noisin mamala oshan tamad loy mevachisa. How do we know you put mala oshan because it says vechisa? The question is kra lekra. Do we need one pasuk to tell us to fulfill what it says in a different pasuk? If we already have the pasuk ki be'onan, then what do we need the pasuk vechisa? Omar Rabbi Yosef hachi kamar. So Rabbi Yosef says, fine. What the braisa means is ainli ela ola mala oshan. If we only had the first pasuk, we would only know that you have to put into the ketores leaves of mala oshan. Ika mala oshan minayin. How do we know that you should put in the root of the plant? Which is how do we know that you should even put in the root of the plant? Rabbi Yosef's assumption over here is that the leaves are better at making the smoke go straight up than the root is. So how do we know that you even have to put in some of the root? Tamad lema v'chisa, and therefore the pasuk says v'chisa. So the second pasuk would tell us that even the less important part of the plant you need to put into the ketores. Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says to him, "V'ha ipchatanya, what do you mean? You're assuming that the leaves are better than the roots. Actually, we learn a braisa the other way around. The tanya, we learn a braisa. Nosin v'ikur mala oshan. In the ketores, they placed. In other words, they when we say they placed, by the way, what we mean is they put it in when they're making the ingredients and they ground it up, same as all the other ingredients. And now you have part of the powder that is the ketores is this mala oshan." So the Braisa says, Nosin v'ikur mala oshan, he would place in the ingredients when they're going to grind them up. He'd put in roots of mala oshan, hoya mitamer v'ola kamako, and then that caused the smoke to go up straight, mitamer mala oshan tamer, so like a palm tree, kamako, like a stick, ad shemagia l'shmei kora, until the smoke reached the roof beams. Now remember, we said yesterday that the Kodesh Kodashim was 20 or 30 amos tall, so the smoke is going up a good distance. It's going all the way up to the ceiling. Kivinchi gia l'shmei kora, once it reached the ceiling, and now smoke usually rises. Now it's not able to rise anymore. There's no place further up for it to go, and there's no hole like a chimney or something for it to go out of. Therefore, kivinchi gia l'shmei kora, once it reaches the roof beams, mimashmish v'yod b'ksalim, then it would start then it would start like feeling its way, kind of like traveling down the walls, ad shenismala abayis oshan, until the whole room is full of smoke. Shenemar, you have the pasuk, but when Yeshaya sees the merkava of Hashem, and he says sees the throne of Hashem, and he says habayis yimolei oshan, and the house, meaning the Beis Hamikdash, was filled with smoke. Which it doesn't mean. I mean, Tosafos Yeshayahu points out it's really only. I mean, that pasuk is not talking about the smoke of the Torah. It's talking about the smoke from the Chayas and Eifane Hakodesh and all. But nevertheless, we see an association that when the Shekhinah appears, there's supposed to be a cloud of smoke. So therefore we see Abaya says that the roots are the more important part. The Braisa is stressing that they put in the root and that made the smoke go straighter. Okay, so Abaya says, fine, flip it around. So fine, from the posit kiba onon, you would only know that you have to put in roots of mala oshan, which are the more effective part. Ola mala oshan minayin. How do we know that you also have to put in leaves of mala oshan, even though those have less of an effect? Nevertheless, you still have to add them as well. Tamad lema v'chisa, therefore we have the second posit v'chisa to teach us that. That's one answer. Rav Sheshes Amar. Rav Sheshes gives a different answer. The reason why we need two psukim, ainli ela oyel moyed shebamidbar, because if we only had the first pasuk, we would know that this din applies only to the oyel moyed in the desert. Shiloh yuvese lomim minayin. How would we know that the same thing applies to the Mishkan in Shiloh and to the Beis Hamikdash? Tamad loyma v'chisa. Therefore, the pasuk says v'chisa, meaning that anywhere you go, anywhere where the Beis Hamikdash is, you have to have the smoke. You have to have the smoke covering the kapodos. You have to have smoke filling up the room and covering the kapodos. Tosfos Yeshayahu mentions briefly over here, and Tosfos has a long discussion about it earlier. That we had a different earlier when we were talking about last week about the din that nobody is allowed to be inside the Heichel while the Kohen Gadol is doing the Avodah over there. So we said that it applies to all Batei Mikdash. We didn't need an extra posik for it. So why do we need an extra posik over here? So one thing over here is there we were talking about where people are allowed to be. Here we're talking about what the Kohen Gadol himself needs to do, and the word V'chein Yaseh implies what he has to do. There we're not talking about doing, there we're talking about where people are allowed and not allowed, so therefore we didn't really need a separate pasuk for it. So the question is, what do you mean that we're learning from V'chisa that it applies to all future Mishkanes and Batei Mikdash? That we learn from a few psukim later, it says this is what he should do for the oyel moed which rests among them, which dwells among them. So we see, in other words, from that pasuk that every time that you're in a place where Hashem's Shekhinah rests, then you have to do the same kind of avodah. So you don't need the word v'chisa, you don't need the pasuk v'chisa to tell us that you do it also in Shiloh and in the Beis Hamikdash. Ella hachikama. No, rather, what Rav Sheshes means to say is the Braisa would be saying, Ainli ella b'yom kippurim. You would only know that this applies on Yom Kippur. B'sha'ar yimos hashanah minayin. How do we know that it applies during the rest of the year? Tamad loyma v'chisa. Therefore, the pasuk would be saying v'chisa. So, what do we mean the rest of the year? So, either we mean the Ketores the rest of the year also has to have mala oshan, which again would be not like the Beis Yosef, who says that it doesn't any time during the year, and not even like the Mishnah Lamelech, who says that it only needs to on Yom Kippur. This would fit better according to the Be'er Sheva, who says that it needs to have Mala Oshan in it all year round. The other possibility is there's an explanation that's given in the name of the Vilna Gaon that says that at least with Aaron HaKohen, maybe not with subsequent Kohen and Gdolim, but at least with Aaron, in principle, if he wanted to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim some other time during the year, he would be able to, but he would have to bring these various korbanos, the par and the ayil and the ketores and so forth that it describes in the psukim over here. So therefore, the vote would be that if he wants to do it on Yom Kippur, then that we learn from Kibbeh Onan Eiru Ala Kaporos, and if he wants to do the same procedure any other time during the year, then we need to learn it from the Pasuk V'chisa. Rav Ashi gives another answer. Chad l'mitzvah v'chad l'akev. Very simple. One pasuk is telling us that it's a mitzvah to have mala oshan, but it doesn't necessarily tell us that if you missed it out, then it becomes osur. V'chad l'akev. The other one teaches us that it's actually ma'akev, and without it, you don't have valid ketores
and without it, you don't have valid ketores, and it'll be posel, and he's going to be chayiv misa. Tosfos and Tosfos Yeshanim point out that usually we've learned before that since it says chukah, since the parasha of Yom Kippur ends off with that this should be chukas olam l'dodaseichem, then therefore that means that every detail of it is ma'akiv. Now we're going to have next week, we're going to have on Daf Samach, we're going to have a whole sugya on the question of what parts of it are ma'akiv and what are not, but definitely everything that's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is definitely ma'akiv. So why do we need a second pasuk over here to tell us that it's ma'akiv? So Tosfos gives the answer that there's a difference again between Yom Kippur and the rest of the year. We need to know that it's ma'akiv the rest of the year. Tosfos Yeshanim says very simple. The Ketores is not made on Yom Kippur. It's made, it's compounded and then ground up before Yom Kippur. So therefore, you need a pasuk to tell us that if you use that, that if you use Ketores without Mala Oshan, then it's la'akiv as well. You shouldn't think that since it was made before Yom Kippur, then maybe it's not an essential thing. Rava Omer Chad La'Onish V'Chad La'Azhara. Rava says another answer. The reason why we need two psukim. One of them tells us the Onish, that if he doesn't do it, he's going to be Chayiv Misa, and the other one tells us the Azhara, the warning not to do it in the first place. So Kiba Onan Eroa Lakapodas would be the warning. Make sure that you go in there with the kind of Todas that produces an onan, that produces a pillar of smoke that will form a cloud in the entire room. And v'chisa ananak teres would be the oinesh, because the pasuk continues that if he doesn't, v'lo yomos, that way he won't die, implying that if he does it the wrong way, he will die. And the Gemara says Tanya. In fact, we have a proof for what Rava is saying. In fact, Ditanya is a different gersa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, when the pasuk says v'lo yomus, when the pasuk says he should not die, that means onish. That tells us the punishment that if he doesn't do it with mala oshan, and kiba on an era azhara. And when it says kiba on an era, that is the azhara. That's the warning that he should make sure not to bring in ketores that's missing the mala oshan. And he continues. So we see, like Rava is saying, that one is for the Onish and one is for the Azhara. So he continues, Rabbi Eliezer continues, Yochu Yoshneim Amurin Kodem Mrs. Bnei Aaron. You would think that both of these things, both the Onish and the Azhara, were given before Aaron's sons passed away, and then Nadav and Avihu. So you would think, in other words, that if we have to figure out what did they do wrong that they got punished with Misibide Shemayim, you would say that they brought in Ketores without Mala Oshan. No, Talmud Lomar, therefore the Pasuk introduces the parasha of Yom Kippur by saying, Acharei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron, after Aaron's two sons passed away. So therefore we can't say that the problem was that their Ketores didn't have Mala Oshan. Yochu Yu Shnei Mamurim Achamisus Shnei Bnei Aaron. Fine, then you would think that maybe both of them took place after the death of the two sons of Aaron. So maybe before, maybe while Nadav and Avihu were alive, there wasn't even a mitzvah to put in Mala Oshan yet. No, Talmud Lomar, Kiba Onan, Eroa Alakapodas. No, the Pasuk says, in the smoke, I will be seen on the Kapodas. So we're gonna see in a second how that tells us that it's before Nadav and Avihu passed away. Hoketzad, so how do we reconcile it? Azhara, Koda Misa, V'Onesh, Achamisa. Means the warning was given before they died, but the Onesh was given only after they died. So before, while Nadav and Avihu were alive, they knew that there's a mitzvah to put in Mala Oshan, and Bepashtus they did. There wasn't yet a Chiyuv Misa for leaving it out. So even if they had left it out, they wouldn't have been Chayiv Misa for that. They were Chayiv Misa for something else, as the Gemara is going to go on to say in a second. And then after they passed away, then Hashem told Moshe to tell Aaron that from now on we have to put some teeth into this. Not only is there an Azhara, but there's also an Onesh for failing to put in Mala Oshan. Again, according to the Beis Yosef, we would have to understand that the other opinions that we had so far disagree with that and say it's not essential to have Mala Oshan, it's not Chayiv Misa without it. And according to the Mishnah of the Melech, it would be Davka on Yom Kippur, and according to the Be'er Sheva, it would be always. So the Gemara says, "My Talmudah, where do we see from the words Kiba Onan Eroa Lakapodas that this was said before Nadav and Avihu passed away. Now, keep in mind, both of these psukim are in Parshas Achrimos, so it would sound like both of them are said Achamos Shnei Bnei Aaron. But okay, in Mukdam Ma'ucha B'Torah, you often have that psukim are given out of order. But what is there in the words Ki Be'onan Eroi Alakapodes that makes us say that this was said only that this was said before Nadav and Avihu passed away? Omar Rava, Omar Cross, and Rava says, because the Pasuk says, Ki Be'onan Eroi. The Pasuk says, in the cloud I will appear, implying Va'adayin Lainira, implying that the Shechina had not yet appeared. So therefore, in other words, so those words, Ki Be'onan Eroi Alakapodes, took place before the Shechina revealed itself. Now, the order of things was they brought the Korbanos, then the Shechina revealed itself, then Nadav and Avihu took their pans and brought the Torah and were killed. So therefore, so if it says Eiroa, then it can't mean that that was said after they passed away, because at that point the Shechina had already appeared. Necessarily, therefore, it must be before the Shechina appeared when at that point Nadav and Avihu were still alive. Okay, so the question is, Ve'ela my time at Yenush. So then why were Nadav and Avihu punished with Misa? What did they do wrong? So the answer is Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in another Braisa, Rebbe Eliezer Omer, the same Rebbe Eliezer says, Loi Mesu Bnei Aaron El Al Shahodu Halacha B'fnei Moshe Rabbe. The sons of Aaron passed away only because they passed in Halacha, in front of their Rebbe Moshe, which is a very serious thing, as we learned about in Eidovin, that a person does that, he can be chayiv misa for that. We learned in Brachas as well, my drush, so what did they darshin? What was this halacha that they taught without consulting with Moshe? They said, when the Pasuk says, v'nosnu b'nei Aaron ha-kohen eish al ha-mizbeach, when it says the sons of Aaron ha-kohen should put fire on the mizbeach, now we know that the fire came down min ha-shamayim, and yet the Pasuk tells us that the kohenim should be putting fire. That means they realized, afapi, even though the fire is coming down from Shemayim, mitzvah lahavi min ahedyet, nevertheless, the proper way of doing the mitzvah is that they should be bringing ordinary fire as well. So they did that. However, and as far as the matter of halacha, they were correct in that, but they should have first consulted with Moshe and asked whether this is correct. And since they didn't do that, they were chayiv mitzvah. Tosfos actually brings over here from Todas Koyanim, there are actually several other opinions of what they did wrong. One of them is that it goes all the way back to Matan Torah. They acted in a disrespectful way. Vayechzur etzadikim, vayechlu vayishtu. Like they ate and drank when they saw the Shechina there on Har Sinai, and then Hashem waited to punish them until now. Another possibility is because they were sort of looking forward to when Moshe and Aaron are going to pass away and they're going to take over the leadership. They let their hair grow too long. They drunk wine. They didn't have the proper big dekahuna. And then there's other midrashim that give yet other reasons. They weren't married. They didn't have children, etc., etc. And Chassidus, we learn that their problem was, that their mistake was, that they had rotzei without shov. They wanted to run towards a lakus without realizing that you can't go to you have to return and be poil in the world. And they didn't want to be. They weren't interested in being poil in the world. They wanted to reach higher and higher levels of kedusha. So therefore, their neshamas left them. All right. So the bottom line is that we understand now what the various psukim about onon mean in connection with ketores. It does not mean, like the tzedukim said, that you prepare that you put the ketores on the coals outside the kodesh hakodashim and bring it in already smoking. It means you put it on the coals first in the kodesh hakodashim. It means it has mala oshen in it, which makes the smoke go straight up and then come down and then spread out to the walls and come down, and therefore the whole room gets filled with smoke. And we see that if there's no mala oshen in it, then according to the straightforward way of understanding the Gemara, then it's chayiv misa. According to the Beis Yosef, we would say that not.
Where in the Kodesh HaKadashim did you have to put the Keteres? Anywhere?
So we said in the Mishnah that he would place it between the poles of the Arayim. We said that the Aron was in the middle, in the first Beis HaMikdash, the Aron was in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or maybe actually I think the Rambam says it was slightly to the west, whatever. The poles of it stuck out toward the east and toward the west, so they stuck out all the way until the Parochas. They even bumped into the Parochas, and you could see bumps on the other side, as we're going to learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem. So you have a space between the poles in towards the front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, between the poles, and that's where he would place the pan of, that's where we place the pan and then sprinkle the ketoda and then pour the ketodas on top of it. We said in the second Miss Mikdash, there was no Oren, so you would put it in the same spot as if the Oren was there.
Why the Mishnah doesn't say that it had the ketoras had to be exactly between the pole, but on the even shtia?
It did. The Mishnah had said that. The Mishnah had said there no sin as a machta ben shnei abadim. Place the machta between the two poles, and we understand that when there's no Bais HaMikdash, then it means. Well, I mean, when there's no Aron, then he places it in the same spot. The Mishnah had the Gemara had said what the Gemara had explained what it means is when there's no Bais HaMikdash, then he when there's no Aron, I mean, then he placed it in the same spot that he would have placed it that he placed it when there was an Aron.
But who say? Where does it say that the shtei abadim they have to be exactly on each side of the?
We're going to learn about the Eben Shtia in the next Mishnah. So halt kaf, and we'll get to it on Amud Beis. We may not get to it today because Dafnun Gimel is quite long, but we'll see. If we don't get to it today, we'll get to it tomorrow. Best Hashem.
So the two poles had to be exactly on each side of the Eben Shtia.
I don't know if they were on the two sides of the Eben Shtia. The Oren was placed on the Eben Shtia. It depends, I guess, how large the Eben Shtia was. Did it cover the whole floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Did it cover only part of the floor? I don't know. Nowadays, if you look at pictures of the Dome of the Rock and the rock in there, which the Radvaz and other people say is in fact the Eben Shtia, you see now on Omid Beis, we're going to learn in the Mishnah that the Eben Shtia was only three Etzbois above the floor, but nowadays the stone over there is much larger. Now there are historians and archaeologists and whatever that argue that is not the Eben Shtia at all. Rather, that some of them say it's the base of the Mizbeach. Some of them say it's other possible things what it could have been. Anyway, but the Radvaz says the fact that it's so much higher off the floor now doesn't prove anything, because he says the Goyim, during all the hundreds of years where they've controlled the Har HaBayis, they've made alterations to it. They've lowered the ground. They've lowered the ground level in some places. And therefore, partly that would be because, after all, they wanted to lower the place where the Bais HaMikdash was in order to humiliate it and in order to desecrate it further, and maybe because they wanted to expose more of the Eben Shtia. Whatever it is, the point is that the fact that nowadays it's quite large and sticks up quite a bit above the floor doesn't necessarily demonstrate that's how it was when the Bais HaMikdash was standing. But anyway, the Eben Shtia we'll talk about on Amud Beis. So let's continue now and get there. Okay, so the Mishnah continued. Yotzo vola jerech pnisasai. The Kohen Gadol then went out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim the same way he came in, which we said meant that he didn't turn around, he backed out. So, menahani mili, where do we know that from? Omer Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer Rabbi Yonasan, Omer Kro, because the Pasuk says, Vayavai Shlomo labama asher b'givon Yerushalayim. This pasuk is before the Bais HaMikdash was built, so when Shlomo wanted to bring korbanos, then he went to the Mishkan, which at the time was located in Givon, and the pasuk says Shlomo came to the Bama that is in Givon Yerushalayim. Now on the surface of it, what the pasuk means is that he went to the Bama in Givon and then he returned to Yerushalayim. But it's a funny way of saying it. What does Givon and Yerushalayim have to do with each other? What do you mean? Why does it say La Boma should be given Yerushalayim? It should have said La Boma should be given by Yoshev Yerushalayim or something like that. Or Meha Boma should be given Yerushalayim. Like this, it sounds like he went to Givon Yerushalayim. So what does that mean? Ela Makishit Yosim given the Yerushalayim, Levi Osim Yerushalayim the Givon. Means the Pasuk wants to imply that the way he left Givon to start returning to Yerushalayim is the same way as he came from Yerushalayim heading towards Givon. Ma biyosei the Yerushalayim the Givon pon of klape bama kederach biyosei. Now, when he was leaving Yerushalayim and going to Givon, obviously he was facing towards Givon, towards the bama, because that's the normal way you travel. You look in the direction that you're going to be going to. Ah, yitziyosei me Givon the Yerushalayim. The same way when he left Givon, when he left the bama in Givon to come back to Yerushalayim, pon of klape bama kederach biyosei, he had his face turned towards the bama again, the same way as he had come. So we see from that you walk backwards rather than turning around. Obviously, once he was out of sight of the bama, then he turned around and continued going normally. But there we see that it's the same thing. The Kohen Gadol, as long as he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then he stays with his face towards the Aron, and therefore he backs out towards the entrance. V'chein koyinim b'avodasan, the same thing is true when the koyinim do their avodah, or levim b'duchan, and the same thing is when the levim are on the duchan, when they're singing and playing the instruments in the azara. And the Yisraelim, when they're there for the Maimed to observe when the Korbanos are being brought as Shluchim of the whole Jewish people. So Kshein Niftarin, any of them, when they leave the Beis HaMikdash, Loi HaYimachzirin Pnein V'Hochen, they don't just turn their face around and walk out with their back toward the Heichel. Elamit Sadidin Pnein V'Hochen, rather they turn their face a little bit towards the side and they walk. The same thing, and we do the same thing when the Aron Kodesh is open, for example, or when the Sefer Torah is being taken out, that we don't turn our back to it. The same thing when a Talmud is taking leave of his Rebbe, he should not turn his face around and turn his back to his Rebbe and leave. Rather, we should turn his face, a bit to the side and then walk that way out of respect. Ki hod Rabbi Lazar, as we have the example of what Rabbi Lazar did. Rabbi Lazar was a Talmud of Rabbi Yechanan. Ki kad have a mifter minei Rabbi Yechanan when he was taking leave of Rabbi Yechanan. So depended which one was leaving first. Kad have a boy Rabbi Yechanan lasaguye when Rabbi Yechanan was going to be the first one leaving. Have a gochin koy Rabbi Lazar adyote. Rabbi Lazar would stand up and stay bowed over in the spot where he was standing. Until Rabbi Yechanan was covered from him, in other words, until Rabbi Yechanan was out of sight, and then he would straighten up and then go about his thing. And vice versa, if Rabbi Lazar was the one who had to leave first, then Rabbi Lazar would walk backwards until he was out of sight of Rabbi Yechanan. So we see that in all these cases, in other words, there's this idea that when you're leaving your Rebbe or leaving a holy place, you walk backwards. The Gemara gives another example. Rava kad have a mifka minei Rabbi Yosef. When Rava would leave Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef was Rava's Rebbe. So when Rava would take leave of him, have a ozalachore, Rava also would walk backwards. Ad deminag fankare, until his feet would bang against the threshold because he wasn't looking where he was going. And the thresholds of Rabbi Yosef's house would be full of blood, would be dirty with blood. Rava was going the fnim mishras adin. Mi'ikra adin, we said all you have to do is mitzadin pnehen. You turn your face a little bit to the side, so you're not turning your back and the back of your head towards your Rebbe, but you basically walk more or less forward, keeping an eye out where you're going, so you don't trip and you don't bump into things or whatever. Rava went lefnim mishras adin, and he's walking actually completely backwards to the point where he couldn't even see where the threshold was, and therefore he'd bang his feet into it. Omru leilu Rabbi Yosef, hachi avad Rava. So they told Rabbi Yosef one time, this is what Rava is doing. Rabbi Yosef himself didn't realize because he's blind, but they told him that this is what Rava is doing. So Rabbi Yosef was very impressed, and he gave him a bracha. He said, Yehei Rava, b'terum reishach hakolei kraka, may it be Hashem's will that your head should be lifted up above the whole city, meaning that you should become the Rosh Yeshiva of the entire city. A couple of other nuances in it is, one is when as long as Abaya was alive, he had a yeshiva in Pupadissa, and then Rava had a yeshiva in Mechuzah. When Abaya passed away, then all of the Talmidim from Pupadissa came to Mechuzah, and the yeshiva was reestablished there. So in that sense, also Rava became the top Rosh Yeshiva. And also, Rabbeinu Chananel says another meaning of Rabbi Yosef's bracha is also that he was telling Rava that you should have the schus that the halacha is going to be like you. And in fact, we find that we know that in all but six places, the halacha is like Rava against Abaya. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef's bracha came true. Okay. Since we're talking about the Kohen Gadol leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim and walking backwards, so now let's talk about another time when we walk backwards is every day when we finish Shemoneh Esrei. So let's talk about the dinim of that. Amar Rabbi Alexandri, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Hamispalo, when a person is davening Shemoneh Esrei, Sarech Shiyaf Siya Shalosh Psiyas La'achorav, he has to first walk three steps backwards, Ba'achakach Yitin Shalom, And then he gives shalom. Then he starts bowing and saying, Oysa shalom imrenu. And Amalei Rav Mordechai, and Rav Mordechai said to him, now on the face of it, who's the him would have to be Rabbi Shurban Levi, but there's no Rav Mordechai that we find in that time. So in fact, a different girsa over here takes out the word lei. And there are actually some Rishonim who, well, let's first see what Rav Mordechai says, and then we'll talk about this. But Rav Mordechai says, Kivin Shaposa Sholosh Psias Lachorav, once he took three steps backwards, Hosni Boiler the Makam, then he should continue standing over there. He shouldn't right away go back to where he davened Shemoneh Esrei. And if he does, Moshal a Talmud and Nifter Mirabbi, if like a Talmud who's taking leave of his Rebbe, and we said he steps backwards, Im Choser La Alter, if he right away returns to where he was, Doima La Kelev Shav Al Kiyai, then it's like a dog who returns to his vomit. In other words, what are you doing? What are you making a joke over here? You just walk backwards, stamazoi, for no particular reason. Or one of the explanations is like this: the whole idea was doing Shemoneh Esrei is you're asking Hashem to forgive you for your various averus, and now you step backwards from that as if you stepped out of that mode of thought, and now you're going right back, and you're going to go right back to those averus again and be asking for them again. It's not right. So therefore, you have to stay standing where you were after the three steps back. Now, there are Rishonim who did not have the statement of Rav Mordechai in their Girsa, and they say, the Rashba says actually, that this does not belong, these two lines do not belong in the Gemara at all. They say that in fact, Rav Mordechai over here was one of the Gaonim, even though actually in Rav Shura Gaon's list of Gaonim, we don't find any of the Gaonim named Rav Mordechai, but okay. Anyway, the Rashba, I guess, had the Kabbalah that there was a Rav Mordechai going, and therefore there was a note of his that was written on the side of the Gemara, and by accident it got incorporated into the Gemara. So therefore, so according to that, there should be no need to wait where you are after the three steps. Nevertheless, though, many other Rishonim do bring this, including the Rif and the Rambam, that you are supposed to stay standing where you were, and the question is, how long are you supposed to stay standing over there? So there's a couple of different opinions about it. Yesh Omrim, that you should stay there until the Chazan begins Chazor Tashatz. Yesh Omrim, that you should stand there until he reaches Kedusha, and then you take three steps forward back to where you daven Shemoneh Esrei. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions. So ideally, you should do until Kedusha. If you can't do that, for example, if it's crowded or whatever, then you can do only until he begins Chazor Tashatz. And if you're davening, and the Ramah adds, if you're davening the Yechidus, or if there's really no possibility of staying back until you need to, let's say, for example, the shul is very crowded, then what you do is then you only need to wait the time it takes to walk 4 amas. But you don't, in any case, you don't walk back right away. You have many people who don't realize this. They take the three steps back, the Shemoneh Esrei, they say, it's a shalom, and then they immediately step forward again. And we see from this Gemara that it's wrong to do that. The Alter Rebbe explains. I mean, there is supposed to be an idea that afterwards you're going to have the three steps back. Later on, you're going to take the three steps forward, and the six of them together should be a unit. And you don't really want somebody walking in front of you and breaking up that unit. Therefore, you have people mistakenly thinking that they should step forward right away. But based on this Gemara, that's wrong. Better let if you want to make sure that people don't walk in front of you in the middle after the three steps and before the three other steps, then okay, dive in a spot where you're not going to have that problem, or like you see sometimes people do in shul, block it with your arm or something. But under no circumstances should you go right away back the three steps. At most, we're saying if it's a real pinch and you can't stay back the whole time, then you stay back for a minimum of 4 hours. Why the three steps back, by the way? There's a number of reasons that are given in Rishonim why Bechlal dot the three steps. Among them are Moshe Rabbeinu went through three levels of cloud, Choshech, Onan, and Arachel, to reach the Shechina. When we daven Shemoneh Esrei in a small way, we're on that level as well. Therefore, we step back three steps to represent that we're leaving that. Another explanation is there were three rows of stones between the Mizbeach and the Kevesh. So when the Kohenim are going off the Mizbeach, then they would step over those three rows of stones. And therefore, that represents this idea of, again, that we're leaving the Avodah. And there's a couple of other reasons. Another one has to do with the fact that it says that Nebuchadnezzar ran three steps for the honor of Hashem, as the Gemara tells in Sanhedrin, and in the source of that, he was enabled to destroy the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore to counteract that, we take our own three steps back, and then later on, and then after the three steps, we say, after Oseh Shalom, we say, Shibana Beis Hamikdash Mehedav Yameinu, that we should counteract with our three steps what Nebuchadnezzar did with his three steps, and be able to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash that he destroyed. In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. Person davens from an esrei, he has to walk three steps backward. And then he starts saying, Oseh Shalom, and bowing. And if he didn't do that, it would have been better for him, it would have been more worthy for him not to have davened. Because if he's not bothering to step back, then again, like if he just finishes from an Esra and just walks away, so what is it? You just had an audience with the king and then you just walk away? No, you step backwards respectfully. Umishum Shmaya Amru. Then the Chachamim added also in the name of Reb Shmaya, they said, Shenosin Shalom Liyamin V'achakach L'Smol. When you're bowing by Oseh Shalom, first you bow to the right, then you bow to the left. Now you're going to ask 1 second, by the end of Shmaya Esra, don't we do it the other way around? We'll get to that point in a minute. Shenemar, we see that the right is more important because the pasuk says Mimino Eish Das Lomoi, from Hashem's right hand was a Torah of fire to them. So we see that, so to speak, Hashem gave us the Torah with his right hand. But Omer, and you have another pasuk until him, Yipo Mitzidcha Elef, 1,000 mazikim will fall at your left side, Uruvava at your side, meaning your left side, Uruvava Miminecha, 10,000 will fall down at your right side. And so we see that the right side is, so to speak, capable of handling many more mazikim because it's more important, stronger. So the question is, my va'omer, why do we need two psukim to teach us the same point? So the reason is, v'chi tema, because if you only had the first pasuk, you would say, you know, okay, so it says Hashem gave us the Torah with his right hand. Not because the right is more important than the left, but just because urcha demilsi, he lemeisa b'yamin. Most people are right-handed, therefore they give something with their right hand. We're talking kav yochel about Hashem. Obviously, he has no hands, but fine, we use the same figure of speech about Hashem giving it with his right hand, not necessarily because the right is more important. Toshma, yipo mitzidcha elef, uruvava miminecha. Therefore, we have the second pasuk, which shows us that the right is actually more important, because after all, there's no particular reason why you should have more mazikim on one side than on the other side. It must be because the right side is stronger and better and more capable of handling a larger number of mazikim and having them destroyed. Okay. So the Gemara tells Rava Chazil Abaya de Yahu Shlomo Yamina Beresha, Rava, the Rosh Hazagirsa Rabba, once saw Abaya was bowing at the end of Shemoneh Esrei to his right side first. Omalei, so he says to him, Mi Sabbath Yamin Didach, do you think that the Yamin over here, which we said you're supposed to go to Yamin first, means your own right side? L'smel didach kamina. What we mean is your left side, to have a Yamina, Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, which is equivalent to the right side of Hashem. In other words, you're standing by Shemoneh Esrei, you're standing in front of the Shechina, so therefore you should bow. When we say to the right side, we mean to the right side of the Shechina, which is your left. The idea is, in other words, again, since the right is more important, and since you're supposed to be walking backwards and bowing like when you're taking leave of a king, therefore you go first toward the king's, toward the Shechina's right side. That's what we do. That's why at the end of Shemoneh Esrei we bow to the left first. On the other hand, when it comes to Kaddish, for example, there we're not standing in front of the Shechina, so therefore we bow to our right first. But the Gemara finishes off this discussion. Amr of Chia Breda Rabuna, Chazinu Lahula Abaya Verava, the Pasilu Sholosh Psias, Bekriya Achas. I saw Abaya and Rava took these three steps back with one bow. In other words, they bowed and then they did the three steps back and then they started doing, and then they did the bowings for Oseh Shalom. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Umispalot Tfilak Tzorah Babaya Sachitzen. We said that the Kohen Gadol, now after he's finished with the Ketores and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he goes out to the outer chamber, to the Heichel, and says a short tefillah over there. And we said he kept it short in order not to scare everybody, so they don't think he died in there. So my matzli, what was the content of his tefillah? Rav barav ada v'rovin barav ada tavayu mishmei de Rav Amri. So Rav barav ada and Rav Ovin barav ada both say in the name of Rav. Yehirot, and the tefillah was, Yehirot in Milfanecha, Hashem Alekeinu, Shetehei Shonazu, Gishuma Ushchuna. May it be your will, Hashem, that this year should be rainy and hot. And the question is, Shchuna Mal Yosehi, is a hot year such a good thing? Why is he davening that it should be hot? Ela Eimer, no. What he meant was, and this is how we say it, in the Seder Avodah, Anim Kippur, Im Shchuna Tehei Gshuma. If it's destined, Min HaShemayim, that this year should be a hot year, then it should also be a rainy year to help compensate for that, because the heat is going to dry things out, is going to dry plants and people and whatever out. Therefore, to compensate for that, it should be a rainier year than usual in order that everything has the moisture it needs. So that was so they said that was the content of his tefillah. Rav Acha Brei de Rava Masayim B'Mashmei de Rav Yehuda. Rav Acha Brei de Rava said in the name of Rav Yehuda that the tefillah had more parts. The Kohen Gadol continued, Lo Yadi Avid Shulton Midveis Yehuda. There should never cease to be somebody who exercises rulership from the family, from the house of Yehuda. So in the first Beis Mikdash, that meant the kings from Yehuda, and in the second Beis Mikdash, that would mean the Roshe Golosa, who were in Babel, and for the last hundred years of the second Beis Mikdash, it also meant the Nesiim in Eretz Yisrael, or the Nesiim descended from Hillel in Eretz Yisrael. So he davened for that as well. The words Lo Yadi Avid Shultan are in Aramaic, by the way, and there's an interesting reason that's given for that is because this is a translation of the pasuk Lo Yosu Shevet Miyehuda, and since he's speaking Baal Peh over here, he's standing over there in the Heichel and davening, he didn't want to use the words of the pasuk so as not to say Dvarim Shemachsav Baal Peh, and therefore he used the Targum. By the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a person shouldn't daven in Loshan Arami because the Malachim don't understand it, but here he doesn't need any Malachim. There are no Malachim even present. We learned before only the Shekhinah is present. Therefore, he can be speaking in Aramaic, and he knows that his tefillah will be heard. And Rabbi Yehuda continued, Rabbi Acha Brei de Rava, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda continued. Also, his tefillah included V'lo yu amcha Yisrael tzrichen l'farnes zemizeh. The Jewish people should not require parnasa one from another. In other words, you shouldn't have people who are poor and need to take tzedakah one from another. Everybody should have lots of money themselves. And the last one was the tefillahs of travelers should not come before you. Travelers don't want that it should rain because that makes it hard for them to travel. So the Kohen Gadol is asking that such tefillahs should not be accepted because the world needs rain. So the Gemara gives an example of it, or an example of such a tefillah. Rav Chanina ben Dosa have a ka'ozel ba'urcha. Rav Chanina ben Dosa one time was walking on the road, shada mitra alei, and rain started falling on him. Omar, so he said, Rabboni shalom, kola olam kola ben nachas, v'chanina b'tzar. The whole world is at ease because they need the rain, but Chanina is in discomfort because Chanina, meaning I myself, am walking down the road over here and it's uncomfortable to be walking in the rain. And sure enough, Pasak Mitra, the rain stopped. This is Chanina ben Dosa was a tremendous tzaddik. So therefore, the rain stopped in his chus. Ki also levesei, then when he came home, Omar, he said, Rabboni shalom, kol ha'olam kulei b'tzar v'chanina b'nachas. The whole world now is in discomfort because they need the rain. Chanina is now comfortable, and because he didn't have any fields that needed cultivation or anything. And also Mitra, and the rain right away started again. Now, Marashah says, I mean, how does Rav Chanina, how could he be so selfish that just because of the discomfort on the road, he's going to stop the rain for everybody where they need it so badly for their crops? So he says, Rav Chanina realized that it's not necessarily that right at this particular moment the rain is needed. The rain is needed, but it can wait a few minutes. It's not going to cause such a sorrow for the world. By the time he came home, it's already, yes, it's really the time when they start needing rain, and therefore he davened that they could start again. Somebody else, I think Ben Yehoyada, says a different word. When he said to begin with, v'chanina b'tzar, he didn't mean to daven that the rain should stop. He was asking Hashem, please provide me with a raincoat or something. But then Hashem wanted to show that he's so chaviv, that he's so precious to Hashem, being such a great tzaddik, that Hashem is going to go beyond teva, not just to give him a raincoat. Fine, Hashem could arrange that he walks a few more feet and he finds a raincoat that somebody threw away and he can take that or something like that. Instead, Hashem showed that he goes beyond teva by stopping the rain for him. So then, once he's back home, then he asks for the rain to start up again because to begin with, he had never asked for it to stop. Amr of Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, Maya Hanyalit Sloisa, the Kohen Gadol, like Amr of Chanina Mendoza. Look at that. What good does the Kohen Gadol's tefillah do when it comes to somebody like Rabbi Chanina Mendoza? Obviously, in other words, when the Kohen Gadol is davening that tefillahs over Drachim shouldn't be listened to by Hashem, he's not talking about tzaddikim of the caliber of Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. Their tefillahs are higher than that. we said in the Mishnah that the Kohen Gadol would keep his tefillah short. So Tananabon and Maisa Kohen Gadol Echad Jeherech B'Tefillah. So it happened once that one Kohen Gadol went daven excessively long in the Heichel, and Tosfos Hashanim brings from the Yerushalmi that this was Shimon HaTzadik. The Nimnu Echav Kohenim Likonis Acharav. So the other Kohenim finally voted and decided we should go in after him. We should make sure that he's not dead or something. Hischilu Heim Nichnasin. So they started coming in, and as they did that, Behu Yotze. Then they saw him coming out. So they asked him, why did you prolong your tefillah so much? He says, is it bad in your eyes that I'm davening for you and for the Beis Mikdash that it shouldn't be destroyed? That's what I was davening so long for. What are you so worried about? Which, by the way, now we learned previously on Daf Lamed Tes, we said that Shimon HaTzadik, every year, when he would come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he would meet up with a figure in white, which we said was actually the Shechina personified, that would greet him and walk in and out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim with him. And then the last year, before he passed away, he saw that same figure was in black, representing mourning, and went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with him and didn't come out. So that told Shimon HaTzadik that he's going to pass away that year. So maybe then the idea is that this extra long tefillah was that same year. Now that he realized he's going to pass away, and the ruchniistic level of the Jewish people is going to begin a tremendous decline, as we had over there before. They stopped using the Shem HaMefodesh, and the girdle Hashem didn't always come up in the Kohen Gadol's right hand, and so on and so forth. So therefore, he had more reason that year to daven that the Beis Mikdash should stand for a long time. Amruloi, so they told him, Altihi Rugil Lasis K, nevertheless, don't be in the habit of doing that. Shari Chaninu, because after what we learned in the Mishnah, Loi Haya Marach B'Tfilah, so he didn't keep his tefillah very long, Kadesh Lo Lahavis as Yisrael, in order not to scare the Jewish people that they shouldn't think that he passed away in there. I once saw a different vort also on this Chassidish vort that the content of his tefillah was Shaloi Lahavis es Yisrael. That we said before various specific things that he asked for, and it seems from various other places that the Kohen Gadol's tefillah didn't necessarily have a fixed nusach. He would say at different times whatever was appropriate at that particular time, whatever needed to be known, and whatever needed to be davened for that year. But the basic content of it was Shaloi Lahavis es Yisrael, that Hashem should not have to scare the Jewish people, that Hashem should give us all kinds of good, tuvanir v'nigla, begashnius v'ruchnius, so that we don't have to be frightened and scared any time during the coming year. Okay.